Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year and a half, and they've done great work. They're honest, they're upfront, they can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff. And we, of course, are sponsored by Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. Tony and I are thrilled to be back with you on this Sunday evening. It is 7:13 according to my computer, and we are here to talk about building your team's defense as the season goes along. What are some things that you need to do to build your team's defense? What should you be working on in practice and all of that good stuff? But before we get into that, Mr. Viss, how are things in the Cedar Valley?
We're 60 degrees. I'm living high on the hog. We went to Des Moines this weekend. Brianna, our oldest daughter, her middle son turned 3 today, so we were able to celebrate Jack's birthday and got to see a lot of family and stuff. And so it was really good.
Good. I got to, went to the Creighton UNLV game yesterday. And of course you have to, you know, unless you get there really early, you got to park a distance away. And it was a nice little 7-minute walk to get inside a CHI arena, no jacket on, just wore a long sleeve t-shirt. And it was pretty good. You know, so
Blue Jays end up winning.
The Blue Jays got the dub. Their second leading scorer, Pop Isaacs, or he might be their leading scorer technically. He's out for the year though with a hip injury. So they're gonna have to figure some things out, which I know Mac and the crew will. And you know, is it me, Tony, or does it just seem like there's a lot of injuries going on this year?
It does seem like there's a lot of injury. A lot of, you know, injuries that are devastating like that. Like Pop Isaacs had been out before, mm-hmm. and then came back, had a great game against Kansas when they knocked off number one Kansas. And then really sad to hear that his season is over because he was going to be a big piece for them this year.
Yeah, they really had the three scorers there and then a bunch of guys around them. But they tinkered with some lineups yesterday, and that's, you know, like I said, smart guys, they're going to figure it out, and we are going to figure out how to build a team defense. But before we get to that, episode number 111, Tony, I've got some really really good ones here this week. In football, we had Larry Fitzgerald. In baseball, Jimmy Rollins, and then maybe perhaps other than Ryan Sandberg, my favorite player growing up as a kid, Mr. Barry Larkin, Hall of Famer for the Cincinnati Reds. So
he was a pretty good basketball player too, if I remember.
Yeah, his son played at Miami, and he had a cup of coffee with the Celtics in the NBA. So, yeah, there's some athletic genes in that family. Yeah,
there's a little bit of athletic genes, like you said, in that family there.
Yeah. We could make a heck of a basketball team out of our number 11s here this week, Tony. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I've got 11 really, really... Yeah, I got 11. I literally have 11 11s, including a father-son duo. So do your best, my friend.
Let's start off with Isaiah Thomas.
Yep.
Okay. And then we got some questionable stuff going on here, because Isaiah was about the only one I was planning on. That was my go-to.
Let's see. Four of these players are still active.
Okay.
Two of them are teammates, and one of them had to very famously change his number this offseason as he signed a free agent contract after spending a long time with his team.
Clay Thompson, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay. And then is Kyrie the other one that's 11 on the Mavs?
There you go. Yep.
Okay. So we're up to 3 out of 11. That's not bad. That might get me a call up to the major leagues.
Yeah.
You said father, son.
Father played behind the Iron Curtain for most of his career, especially the healthy years of his career.
Okay, so we got the Sabonis, Vitas, and is it DeMontis?
DeMontis, yes. DeMontis, and he's not my Vitas, he's not your Vitas, he's our Vitas, Sabonis. All right, so there's 5, yep.
Okay. That would feel like most days. That's pretty good. I'm not even halfway.
I got a point guard, an active point guard. I've got a massive center. The first international player to be drafted number 1, I believe.
Is Embiid 11?
Nope.
No? Okay. Massive center.
I'm talking.
Let's go with Zach Edey.
Nope. He's even bigger than Zach Edey. International.
It's not Wimby, is it?
It is not. Yao Ming.
Yao was 11. Okay.
Yeah, Yao was 11. You just want me to give you the rest of them?
Yeah, here? Just give the rest. Yeah. We're gonna be here till midnight.
Elvin Hayes. Bob McAdoo.
Okay. Like little Bobby McAdoo when he was with the Lakers.
Yes. Trey Young, the last active player that we have listed. One of my favorite players of the 90s, Detlef Schrempf. And then from the 50s, I would have given you this one eventually. Paul Arizin, Hall of Famer, scored over 20,000 points. So I really looked at this. You're not a member of the Syracuse Nationals fan club?
No. Ugh. We'll let those other 3 people have it.
Well, it's me and my brother and my son. So, I thought, man, you could, if you had Isaiah and Kyrie in your starting backcourt, you could play Clay. And then you have Yao at center. You could have McAdoo or Elvin Hayes at your power forward. You could bring in Trey Young off the bench. Yeah, you'd be all right. Arvidas, coming off the bench, DeMontis coming off the bench, Arizona will carry the water. But everybody else, a pretty good group here, Tony. Pretty good team. Yeah. So let's talk about defense, Tony. Let's talk about building your defense. I know I had my system of, hey, we're gonna we're going to do this. And this is foundation piece number one. This is foundation piece number two. This is And I was pretty analytical as to how we were going to build our defensive fundamentals over our preseason and early into the season. And it was a pretty meticulous step-by-step process on how we were going to teach things. Start with just a one-on-one closeout, nobody dribbling. Now let's go one-on-one and let's try to score. We're going to limit dribbles. And then you go two-on-two and here's where you should be at in the gaps and different things like that. And there's a lot of things that you need to think about with your defensive philosophy. But I know one thing for me, it was imperative that every day in some way, shape, or form, we were working on closeouts. And one of the mistakes I made in my coaching career, we went through a stretch. I was a man coach for the longest time. And then we kind of went Jim Boeheim 2-3. And we really didn't do a lot of those basic principles because we just went with the zone. And what then happened is when we needed to go back to playing a lot more aggressively with our man-to-man, it took us about a whole season to rebuild those principles of closing out and jumping to the ball man-to-man. And that's something I really regret in my coaching career, that we didn't do as good a job as we could have getting back into that area. And so closeouts area, even if you're a zone coach, I think the one thing that I'm going to lead with here, Tony, is you have to do closeouts every single day. You've got to learn, and not only that, and I know we're talking about defense this week, but you got to learn how to score one-on-one as well as defending people one-on-one on an island, because you could be caught on an island in transition, so forth and so on. But I think closeouts are the base principle of any defense that you want to run.
Yeah, everybody teaches pretty much that once the ball gets to a side, you get in help. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think the offensive coaches teach a lot of is to throw a skip pass, whether you throw it from the wing to the other wing or whether you feed the post and have the post kick opposite. And offense a lot of times comes down to, can you attack that closeout? And if you are not good with the closeout, is going to cost you time and time and time again. And I think that that's something defensively, that as the closeouts get better with emphasis and reps and so on and so forth, that really can be those, as you tighten the screw, so to speak, and begin to limit teams even more offensively. If your closeouts are sharp, you're in really, really good situation. And so I would double down with you on that. I think closeouts are kind of the linchpin, if you will, of pretty much any defense.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to lead with here, Tony?
Yeah, you talked to a lot of stuff that I had down here. I mean, one of the first things you have to talk about is positioning, whether that is so very, very key as well. One of the things with us, and I think with a lot of defenses, is you emphasize getting up into the person, making them uncomfortable and get their eyes down. And if you can do that, you're in really, really good shape. Part of what we do in terms of that, like you were talking about starting one-on-one, that's exactly what we do. And we'll start them, whether it's at the elbow or the wing or wherever, and tell them offensively they've got 2 to 3 dribbles. Defensively, get their eyes down and push them away from the basket, influence them away from the basket and contest the shot and be straight up. And that's really where we kind of base it and set it. And then like you talked about, once you get out of that, then you get into that 2-on-2 situation where, one of the things we always talk about is I've never seen anybody score without the ball. And so we load it up to the ball side and you get in that help defense. And that's so very key. We want to, basically play 5 defense against 3 offense, if you will. And then after you kind of get that help emphasized, we'll do what we call skip, skip live, 2-on-2 skip, skip live. And we'll work on that. And then as we work our way through that, then we begin to go with those help. Then we begin to emphasize closeouts even more and trying to make sure you close out with high hands. You chop your feet the last third. You're able to make them think that you're playing them for the shot when in all actuality, you're ready to kick step and play them on the drive. And then the other thing that we like to do as well is we like to talk about what are we going to do when they screen? And we think that's so very, very important. That's one of the things, I won't necessarily say that's unique or original about us, but we are a heavy switch team.
Yep.
And so you have to be able to do that. And so we'll go 3-on-3, pass it to a wing, screen away. And we'll really talk about meshing the feet together and making sure that we communicate the screen, we call out the switch, and we execute it. And then we'll have them flip it to the other side, do the same thing. And then after we get both of the sides of the floor touched, then it's live 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. And so those are very, very important things for us. And one of the things that I think that we have to get through a little bit with ours, with the switching, is that one of the things we really emphasize with them, not that mismatches don't get you scored on, because they do. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say they don't. But what gets you beat more are open shots.
Yep.
And even if you get a smaller on a big or a big on a small, whatever, as long as it's contested, that's what you want. Yep. And the other thing that you can do is if they try to play your mismatch in the post, we have what we call fire, where we come in, we fire a helper in there. And so, you know, we'll blitz ball screens from time to time when teams are trying to get that mismatch on us and roll the center down off our point guard. And so we'll fire it, or we'll double it, we'll run help into the post. We do all kinds of different things to try to get that. But again, a lot of it goes to what you're comfortable with, what you teach, and having those building blocks in there that are your non-negotiables that you do every day. And we do stuff out of shell. We'll go four defense against five offense. And the only way they can get out is deflecting the pass. And, you know, we put it in the full court because we're a heavy press team. We switch out of it as well. But it is a long process, and it takes us, like, we're 3 weeks in, Marty, and there's still all kinds of holes in it.
Yeah.
But it's getting better. It does. It just takes time. It just takes time, like anything, if you're going to be good at it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things you talk about there, Tony, which I think is so true. You get so worried about the mismatch. You know what gets you beat is a no match. You know, give me a mismatch over a no match any day of the week. Just find somebody. And like you said, especially when I got to Fort Calhoun, we switched everything. A lot of times it was just out of necessity. I mean, it made no difference, especially my first year or two. Are we going to put this 5'6" girl on you, or are we going to put this 5'7" girl on you? For the most part, you know, and so if we're all pretty much the same anyway, let's just, and now there were certain things that we taught, you know, you got to stay under the ball at all times, you know, don't get beat on a slip. You have to go all the way to the screener, make sure nobody slips to the basket. We'll allow the reversal. Let's keep the ball out of the lane. Cause again, we were a small team, especially though. And even last year we weren't big. We you know, our one gal was about 5'11". We had another gal that was about 5'10", 5'11", another one that was about 5'9"-ish, and then everybody else was 5'8" or below, you know, so we weren't very big. So that was how we had to protect the rim, and we used that kind of in a pseudo zone type of way. So those off-ball screens, what you're going to do, what's your communication level, no slips to the basket, I think that's really important. Kind of where everything starts at is defensive transition. You know, what's going to be your defensive transition philosophy? And as Coach Meyer would say, you know, what's your OBC? What's your offensive board coverage? And you really, and again, we're talking about defense, but this is the last time I think I'm going to talk about offense. What's your shot selection? As Jay Billis would say, a bad shot is the same thing as a turnover. So you want to make sure you take good shots and you take care of the ball so that your defensive transition will be what it needs to be in order to stop that ball and prevent the other team from getting easy baskets. You know, so are you going to send all five to the board? Are you going to send 1.5 to the board? If you're below the free throw line, you crash, you get back. You know, what are your rules there with your defensive transition? And I think that along with most of these other things you can get by with not doing on a daily basis. But for me, the two biggest things that I did every day in some way, shape, or form were closeouts and defensive transition and how we're going to do that. And I've done it every single way. You know, last year we sent all five to the board and then we immediately pressured. We called it smother, deny, and then get back. You know, smother, deny, three, get back. And that's the way we slowed down the other team going the other way. And again, we were small, but we were really athletic and fast. So we could create a lot of our defense off, or a lot of our offense off of our defense in that way. But I've also been in situations, well, we're only going to send these to the board, you three get back. We're not sending anybody to the board, just get back. We're going to kind of do the Princeton thing because we're really not going to get anything out of it anyway. You know, so what's that going to be? I think that's a big part. For me, Tony, that's a big thing.
I think one of the most defeating things in the game of basketball is when you score And then you kind of jog back and they throw one up ahead of them and they score a layup right back in about 4 or 5 seconds. I think that's one of the most defeating things in the game of basketball is the fact, hey, we worked really hard. We got one. Unfortunately, we decided to celebrate a little bit too much. And now they're running it down our throat and they've scored on us 4 or 5 seconds after we did. And so I think defensive transition is one of those things that, like you said, it's a non-negotiable. You have to sprint back and build your wall, if you will, and then work your way out. And part of those things that go through all of this that we talk about, that's kind of the glue that holds everything together, is communication. And, you know, who's got ball? Where are you at? Are you in denial? Are you in help? You know, screen coming. I mean, you have to talk. It should not be quiet out there at any time. And I think that's the thing that sometimes is hard for maybe younger kids to get used to, mm-hmm. is the level of communication you have to be at, that communication that's the glue that holds things together. And so, you know, defensive transition, communication, those are things that you cannot compromise on. If you do, you're going to be average to below average defensively. And, you know, I just think one of the things that's so very, very important is the defensive transition can get you organized, and then the communication piece gets you specifically organized. And if you can do that, you have a shot to be pretty good on the defensive end. Mm-hmm.
As we enter into this holiday season, coaches, you know what would make a great gift for you this year? It would be a copy of Kings of Their Court, the story of the 2020-2021 season here in Omaha. Three ranked teams in the top 25 in the country, and you're going to hear the personal and professional stories of players like Hunter Salas and Chucky Hepburn, Frankie Fiddler, William Kyle, coaches like Tim Cannon, Josh Ludke, and Doug Woodard. Just a terrific, terrific story. A crazy time period in our country with quarantine, politics, George Floyd, and everything in between. Yours for only $19.99. Go to Amazon, go to books, look up Kings of Their Court, and order a copy of that today. It's going to be a great stocking stuffer for you, for somebody that you love. Tell your wife, tell your spouse, tell your kids, hey, I would love to have a copy of this book and have something to read here and to just read about a great basketball story. Kings of Their Court, available on Amazon.com today. Next thing I had, Tony, was your ball screen coverage, your dribble handoff coverage, those two-man game type of things. You know, I've been at college practices where they have five or six different color coverages. Obviously, in NBA, they have who knows how many upteen different type of coverages that they're going to run there. But I think in high school, if you've got one or two good coverages that you can really do, I think that has to be done, you know, and we're seeing more what I always called CBS, continuity ball screen offense. And so a lot of times we would really ice on those wing ball screens and we would switch everything else in the middle. If you weren't on the wings, you're screening at the top, we're switching it. If it's on the wing, we ice it. That was the way we preferred to do it. But what is your ball screen coverage, your dribble handoff coverage? What's that going to be and how are you going to get through that? Especially as more and more of that philosophy creeps its way into the lower levels of the game, the small college, the high school level, et cetera.
Yeah, I think one of the big things with high school, and like you talked about, you know, college, NBA, you're going to have a handful or more of different types of coverages on things. And I think at the high school level, like you said, one or two is very important. And I'll be honest, you know, I think one of the things with high school, if you can have one coverage so that everybody's on the same page, it's consistent. You know, I think we get in trouble as coaches when we get into a lot of gray area. Well, hey, we're going to do this if it's here. And then if this kid's left-handed, we're going to do this.
Yep.
Then over here, if they do this, we're going to do this one. And I think that's where you get people, I didn't know they were left-handed. You know, you get a lot of the things confusing. And that way, if you have just something, hey, this is how we're going to do it. No ifs, ands, or buts. This is, you know, that always never thing. We always do it this way. We never do it that way. I think that is very, very important for high school kids, just the consistency of it. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you might have a different wrinkle, a different look every now and again. But for the most part, I think if you can get one, maybe two, you're probably in a great situation at the high school level.
Mm-hmm. What else you got, buddy?
You know, I think some of the things that you get into too is once you start to get stuff down, you can maybe fine tune some things a little bit. You know, you can talk in terms of like footwork with some stuff with them. I think that's so very, very important. You know, we talk a lot about when the ball, we want to keep the ball on the side. One of the things that we talk with our kids about a lot is if there's a lot of ball reversal going on, that's going to, eventually we're going to break down. And yep. So once we get the ball on the side, we want to keep it on the side. I know you used the word ice earlier. Mm-hmm. That's something that we talk about. Another thing that we like to do as well is if the ball's along the baseline, we like to funnel it hard to the baseline. We don't give up the baseline. It's not like, hey, here's the baseline, take it. And
yeah.
You know, you get yourself in rotation, you give up a corner drift or something like that. But we try to use the baseline as an extra defender.
Yeah.
And we feel like if we have those things footwork-wise, that we're in pretty good shape on that. The other thing that you have to talk a little bit about with them too is the whole anticipation thing. Like a lot of teams will go where they'll throw the ball to a wing and then they'll screen away and they'll run somebody up top. You know, if you're switching that, when you mesh the feet and you're switching that, there are times they'll throw the ball right to you. But if you're not anticipating it and you just hang off your player 3 to 5 feet, that's not what you want. And so you really got to emphasize that philosophy on a daily basis. Get up into them, get them uncomfortable, get their eyes down. And if you can get the team to play with their eyes down and to double them when a team does a spin or they change direction somehow, if you can get that double team at the right time, I think those are things that you work on with them as well. And that just continues to help your defense become even better.
Yeah. Along with double teaming, and like I said, you know, how you're going to play it, you know, on the ball, which way you're going to funnel it, which way you're going to push it. I think that's really important as well. We pushed everything baseline, sideline. And once it got on the side, like you said, Tony, once it got on the side, we tried to keep it on the side. You know, and with that, we also talked about how you're going to play your help coverage off the ball. You know, are you going to be, you know, where's your rotation coming from? Are you going to be in the gap? Are you going to be up the line, on the line? Are you going to fully commit to helping? Are you going to stunt? You know, that becomes more and more popular where people will stunt and not even come to help. We're just going to stunt and get back. And hopefully by forcing, by seeing that stunt jump out, they pick up the ball and they're able to recover again because you want to stay one-on-one. You don't want to get caught in the wash, so to speak. You don't want to get two on the ball and go. You know, on offense, you're trying to get two on the ball. On defense, you're trying to stay one-on-one. It's pretty simple, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so what your help coverage is going to be, I think that's another really important one as to what you're going to teach and how you're going to teach it.
Most definitely. You know, and there's things like for us, teams know that we switch. It's no secret. Kennedy switches everything. And so there are actions that are hard. Like you mentioned slips earlier. Another thing that's hard too are what are called ghost screens. Mm-hmm. Those are really hard for teams that switch to deal with. And so those are things I think you have to practice on a daily basis because those are things that good teams are going to do to you to try to compromise your philosophy and try to compromise what you do. The other thing that you can do as well is as you work through this and you get into those scouts is figure out what are the sets, what are the offensive plays that these teams run, and then how are you going to make that work with your defense? What are you going to do to disrupt that offense, make them go to option C, D, or perhaps even E, mm-hmm. because that limits a team's effectiveness. And then another thing, too, to think about besides specifically with their offensive sets, something that's interesting, too, is when you really work hard on their out-of-bounds plays, whether that's sideline or underneath, I think that's important to work on with it as well, just because you can make it really hard and get some 5-second violations and take away those wrinkles, those things they like to do specifically with their out-of-bounds plays if they're trying to score against you.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I had, Tony, was your post coverage. How are you going to cover the post? Are you going to, you know, full front? Are you going to play behind, 3/4 bottom, 3/4 top? We used to call it gold, silver, and bronze. And most of the time it was either gold or bronze because silver is really, really hard to do, especially for high school players. But if we said, hey, every time the Vis kid gets it in the post, we're golding hard. That means we're doubling down and tripling down. We're getting that ball out of there. And usually we would designate one person. All right. You know, and the best one I ever had at it was a gal named Jessica Schlappman, now Jessica Bracker. And she was pretty good athlete, pretty good, you know, state athlete of the year, her senior year. So she made me look pretty smart. Yeah. And But she did a great job of reading that gold situation and digging down and getting steals and making things difficult there. Or silver was, hey, wait, when they put it on the floor, then we're going to go attack it. Bronze was, hey, we're just going to play it straight up one-on-one. No need to attack here, or no need to double down. We think we can guard that one-on-one if our posts are smart. You know, so your post coverage, I think that's another big thing that you need to think about. And again, like you said, Tony, let me ask you this. When it comes to stuff like that, are you more inclined, this is what we're going to do every game, game in, game out, and we're not going to adjust it based on the opponent and the player? Because I think for high school kids, it's better to fall back on making your habits really, really good, and hopefully it's good enough, rather than trying to tweak it five different times throughout the year, depending on a scouting report or opponent or that type of thing.
We are more of let's do it this way every time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the fact, like you said, we want consistency. We want that always, never thing. We're always going to do it this way, never do it that way. But at the same time, I will tell you this. There are times we have played really good kids in the post. And like I said, we call fire. And
yeah.
So with fire, we're running that double at it. And we run the double from the weak side of the floor, then drop down the weak side wing to take it away. And then we see if they can figure out to kick the ball to the weak side wing. And then we go flying back to the rotation spots that we came from. But we maybe do that at my level, not often. We did it one time last year.
Yeah.
You know, but at the varsity level, there are some really good post players in our state from time to time. And John's really good at that. And so he will do that. We'll call the fire thing. You know, and then, like I said earlier, one of the other things we'll do too, because teams like to get us in that switch where we'll have the post come out, set a screen on the point guard. Our point guard goes their post and just roll it down hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so to deal with that, we would run what we call blitz. And so when they came off it, we would blitz the ball screen and double it hard and then rotate into the passing lanes to try to, you know, discourage them from doing that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Get the ball out of the best player's hands, that type of thing. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
What else you got, buddy? I got three or four things left.
You know, I'm pretty close with being done with ours. The one thing that I go back to with us is the fact that with ours, we try to make sure we do the half court thing. There are half court drills we feel like we have to do every day, like skip live with closeouts. That's an everyday drill for us. 3-on-3 screen away so that we have to mesh feet and switch it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an everyday thing for us. There are times we'll do the 4 defense against 5 offense. That's not an everyday thing for us, but it really emphasizes that we want to get deflections. And then in the full court, there are things that we try to do every day. We call it 00. There are things we try to do with that every day, just so that we're getting better at it. But the one thing, you know, that's always interesting with us too, is that I have another defense I'll throw out there instead of our heavy switch. We run a 1-3-1. And so just to give a team a different look, because the thing that they like to do against our switching full court press is they just like to clear it out. And so we'll hop into a 1-3-1 three-quarter court trap just to throw a little bit of a curveball at them. But we feel that that's super important to have that other wrinkle as well, just so that teams don't get comfortable doing what they do against us. And that way it's not just, hey, we're just going to throw it in, throw it back, clear it out, walk it up, and then we'll see what we can get it out of the half court. And so we have a few wrinkles here and there just to keep teams on their toes and keep them honest.
Yep. Yeah, and that's one of the things I was going to talk about here, you know, with the wrinkles. I think you bring up a really good point. What wrinkles are you going to put in? I really evolved into, okay, well, what's our man philosophy? What's a good zone? And then what's a junk defense we can run if we needed to, you know? And last year we got pretty good and we had, you know, the right personnel, I would say, to run a pretty good triangle and two. And it really helped us out a couple of times last year, especially towards the end of the year. And, you know, so, you know, that's something that you need to think about. Can you do a little bit of a wrinkle, like out of a timeout or a quarter break? Hey, when they throw it to the wing, can we trap right away? That's what we call thumbs down, you know, or different things that'll take them out of their rhythm there. So you can't have 62 defensive options, you know, as much as we would like to have this and this and this and this. One man, one zone, one junk would be my personal advice to any coach out there. If you can do more than that, you've got a really smart team, in my opinion. Rebounding technique was another one, Tony, that I had. You know, what you talked about your footwork out there, but, you know, and I got less scientific as we moved forward. Find a body, hit somebody, go get the ball. You know, and we're not going to spend, you know, right reverse pivot, you know, if they lead with this shot and do that. It's just get a good challenge, drive somebody out. If you're off the ball, go find a body, drive them out, hit, and then go get the doggone thing. And then the other thing I had was to press or not to press. I think that's a decision you need to make within your defensive philosophy, what you're going to do with this year's team. I always think it's better to work on pressure and have some sort of pressure that you use. You don't have to press all the time, but you have to have something. I always, and again, the a lot of the men and women that coach at the Division I or Division II level, the college level, they're smarter than me, and so be it. But I'm always, you know, I see teams that never press, and then they get to the last 2 minutes of the game and they're down 10 and they've got to press and they're terrible at it because they haven't pressed for the first 38 minutes. It's not ingrained into their system. And I always thought, you know, even if you're just able to press for a quarter of the game and your kids don't panic when you have to press, because when you're down 10 with 2 minutes left to go and coach says, hey, we got to get into black. We got to get up into black, get up, go pressure. Well, now they're panicking like, oh crap, we must really be in trouble. Not that they don't know that already, but you know what I mean, Tony, the mental shift that it takes there. And so I've always believed, even with my least athletic teams, we had some sort of passive pressure that we could throw at somebody more than anything else, that when we did need to pressure, we were capable of doing it. We could do it, and it didn't turn into a panic situation for us. So those are kind of some of the things that I think should be, you know, that you should be thinking about as well.
Yeah, the rebounding thing I think is important. And like you mentioned, if you're a team that can only do one thing defensively, and then all of a sudden, say, you know, like you mentioned, the example you gave with the zone, and I've seen it happen to teams here in Iowa where they were zone team only. And then all of a sudden, late in a game, this was before shot clock, when they pull the ball out and they go four corners on them and they have to go man, and you can tell they haven't played a possession of man all season long as they get backdoored for an easy one. And it's the same thing. You know, if you are not a pressing team, that's okay, but you at least have to be somewhat competent at it and have something to go to in those situations. And the other thing I would go through too with a team, this will be my last one here, is, you know, you've got to be able to do different situations. Like, for example, so you have two team fouls. Here in Iowa, we're doing the thing now when you get 5 1/4 a team shot. Yep. So maybe you want to foul a couple times, you run some time off the clock, you know, or if the team has to go the full length of the court in 6 seconds, practice those situations so that your team knows what to do, because it's awful hard to get on them. I can't believe we gave that up. Well, did you ever practice it? No, we've never practiced that situation. Then what are you mad about? You've got to give them a chance to practice it so that they know what to do and how to execute when it hits the fan, if you will.
Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is. If you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing. Is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. it's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, Tony, you know who was always ready when anything would hit the proverbial fan. It would be
Europeans.
That's right. It is the Europeans. It is time for the coaching staff trivia. Mr. Viss, it is your turn to have a question ready to go this week. What do you have for me, my friend?
All right. The Washington Wizards broke their 16-game losing streak. Who did they knock off to do it?
That was, unfortunately, the Denver Nuggets. And Jokic's, I think he had 56. Yeah. And they still couldn't beat the powerful Washington Wiz. Nobody beats the Wiz. And they get they snap the 16 game lead. They are not good. No.
They are not
good. In fact, they are so bad that when that final score came across, this guy said this.
How about that?
You ain't kidding there, Mal Allen. You know, how about that? That was a crazy game. And we had a lot of crazy games this week, Tony. A lot of really, really good men's college basketball games here. It was the challenge week. A lot of the challenges were put out there. Duke beats Auburn at Cameron Indoor. North Carolina drops one at the Dean Dome against Alabama. Here in Omaha, we had the big upset with Creighton defeating Kansas very handily. And then, as we talked about earlier, you know, Pop Isaacs being out for the year there. Unfortunately, that was his last game as a Blue Jay, but for this year. But what a game it was. UConn defeating Baylor, kind of riding the ship a little bit. Iowa State knocking off Marquette at Hilton, a little Hilton magic there. Then Marquette knocking off Wisconsin yesterday. Sounds like Kentucky and Gonzaga had a heck of a game last night that Kentucky ends up pulling out at the end. What a great week for college basketball, Tony. And do any of these games tell us much of anything, or was it just like, let's enjoy it while we can?
I would say let's enjoy it while we can. But at the same time, you know, I go through and I take a look at some of the things, and I think the SEC is an underrated basketball conference. That would be the one big takeaway. I would go with it there. But the other takeaway I would give you as well would be this. I think the men's game is so up for grabs. I mean, Kansas got beat again. Missouri knocked them off.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I think the men's side of things is so up for grabs. It's not funny. You know, I don't know if I could say that there is a number one team, a best team in men's college basketball right now. And the other thing too, it could change very easily in the next couple, 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just going to be one of, and I think college basketball from here on out, Tony, it's that's the way it's going to be. It's just going to be, a lot of ups and downs. Teams are, you know, with the transfer portal, with guys leaving early. Now we'll see what happens with players leaving early, because Sometimes they can make more money in college than they would on a much more money on a, in college, and then they would getting on a two-way contract and you know, and doing that type of thing. So, I think it's gonna stay more like this than having your dominant teams that go 36-2 and win a national championship, just because you're not gonna have players there for that long, and to have that cohesion in your roster, I think that's just going to be less and less feasible as we move forward. But we just some really really good games. You know, I was disappointed. I really wanted to watch the Iowa State Marquette game, but we didn't get that here, which was kind of a bummer.
PM plus.
Yeah. And, you know, we were at a Christmas party last night, so I didn't get to see the Gonzaga game, but a lot of really, really good games there. So, let's talk a little NBA, Tony. We have the in-season tournament ramping up this week. We've got our bracket set. We've got Milwaukee against Orlando, New York against Atlanta, Oklahoma City and Dallas on the other side of the bracket, along with Golden State and Houston. What do you think of this whole deal? Who do you think, who would be your horse if you were to pick one here, Mr. Viss?
It's tough for me to do this because I think Oklahoma City is really, really good, but the team I would take right now would be Dallas.
Okay.
Because Dallas has won 7 in a row. They're, you know, playing well, getting Clay ingrained in with the Mavericks. And I thought they might be a team, Marty, that might drop a little bit. I thought maybe they caught lightning in a bottle at the end of last year, but then obviously with adding Clay, they kind of moved the chips to the center of the table. But I like Dallas in this tournament. And with Oklahoma City not being at full strength, you know, no Chet. And I think Hartenstein got hurt again, if I remember correctly. Oh, but maybe,
I didn't
maybe
see
he's
that.
Back. I don't.
Yeah.
But the game I was watching, he had to sub out there for a little bit. But anyway, I think I'm going Dallas.
I think my dark horse was going to be Orlando. They were playing really well. And then, I don't know if you saw it or not, Franz Wagner tore his oblique now. So, you know, if you're a really good player in the Orlando area, watch your stomach muscles here in the near future. Because not only is it Paolo that's now hurt, but now it's Franz Wagner with the exact same injury. So, they were kind of my dark horse here, but I think Milwaukee, now Milwaukee's had a really, really soft schedule here that's kind of helped them right the ship a little bit. But I think they've got a chance to beat Orlando, especially at home. So I got Orlando going through there. The Knicks are really starting to come together. And I've got the Knicks there. I would take Oklahoma City on the other side, and I like Houston. I think if I had to pick somebody to win it all, I think it's going to be Houston. I think it's going to be Houston and New York in the final, and I'm going to go out on the limb, and I'm going to say it's going to be Dylan Brooks and the Houston Rockets are going to be your Emirates Cup champions. So you've got Dallas, I've got Houston. Yeah. All right.
Somebody from Texas is going to win it.
Yeah. So apparently somebody from Texas is going to win it. Exactly. So our women's basketball topic of the day, the resurgence, if you will. This would hard to be, you know, years and years ago, Tony, in our formative years as basketball coaches, you would think this would be a crazy statement to say, but Tennessee is kind of back a little bit. Now they've played some cupcakes here, but they've got a really good win over a quality Florida State program, and then they beat Iowa pretty convincingly last night, forced over 30 turnovers. They are 7-0. Talisha Cooper is averaging 20 points a game. She's shooting 56% from the field. People were kind of wondering what they were doing hiring the coach that they did. She came from Marshall, I believe, and there were some brows that were furrowed a bit, I'm sure, probably in volunteer land, like we're Tennessee, shouldn't we quote unquote get somebody better than this? But they are pressing, they are running, and that's what and I'm gonna look up her name here real quick because I want to give her credit.
Kim Caldwell, isn't it?
Kim Caldwell, okay. You know, they are, yes, Kim Caldwell it is. They are doing what she did at Marshall, and it has been successful up until this point. Now, again, the schedule is going to get more difficult as they move through here. They've got, I saw this here, they got Oklahoma coming up. They've got LSU coming up. You know, you're going to get into the teeth of the SEC, Texas, South Carolina. They've got UConn in the non-conference. So it's going to be a bear, but again, this was normal when we were in our formative years as coaches, Tony. And I think the women's game is better when Tennessee is good.
I would echo that. I think the women's game is better. And, you know, I think it's Danny White that's the AD at Tennessee, if I remember correctly. And if you go through and you take a look, the Rick Barnes hire, the Josh Heupel hire, and trying to think of the baseball coach, I think it's Tony V, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Anyway, hit those all out of the park. And I think he's done the same thing here with Kim Caldwell. Now, one thing that'll be interesting to see her navigate is I believe she's due in January. And so it'll be interesting to see how long she's away from the team and all that good stuff and different things that go along with that. But I watched that Iowa game, at least the last probably 10 minutes of it last night, and just was really, really impressed. They had Iowa discombobulated. Mm-hmm. It was, I think Iowa was up 3, and then Tennessee, I want to say it was 11-0 run, if I remember correctly, and then kind of hit them with that at the end, held them off, and kind of won going away. And like you said, forced over 30 turnovers, and I get Caitlin Clark's not there, but you know they've got some quality guards. Lucy Olson that transferred in from Villanova is a good player, and you know they've got some good players there. But Tennessee looked the role. You mentioned Cooper, really good offensively, but Marty, but almost as impressive defensively as she is offensively, she is definitely a two-way player.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a good deal for the game. Like like we both said, Lucy Olson just coming back from injury when they played there, and she still had 23 points, so she had a quality game. But you know, it was it's just good to see. Like I said, it's good to see Tennessee back. You know, at least being in the conversation. Do we think they're going to win a national championship this year? I don't think so. But for them to be significant and to grab people's attention again, that's a really, really good thing. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. And speaking of grabbing people's attention. Tony, who is up in your world?
You know, as I go through and I take a look at who's up for me, I'm going to go to the NBA,
okay.
Right? And the team I'm going with there is the one that I picked earlier, and that was to win the Emirates Cup, and that is the Dallas Mavericks, who are in the middle of a 7-game winning streak and are 9-1 in their last 10 games. So that is who I'm going with my up pick.
Okay. I hope this makes sense because it's not really going out on a limb in one vein, but at the same vein, it is. I am up on the Connecticut women. They're 8-0. They just absolutely destroyed Louisville yesterday, 85-52. As always, you know, and again, they're not short on great players or any talent or anything like that. I fully get that. But they are really starting to come together. They are right now If you force me to take your mortgage payment and put it down on who I think will win the national championship this year, Tony, I think it's going to be UConn. I think they've got the best player. I think they're obviously going to be very battle tested by the time they get to the NCAA tournament. They got Notre Dame this Thursday, which will be a big one at Notre Dame. They've got Iowa State coming up after that. They're going to have USC, and then, you know, they play Tennessee later on. They've got South Carolina later on. They should be the dominant team in the Big East, and I just think Geno. I think this might be, and who knows how long Geno's going to go here, but I think he's got a group that is starting to resemble some of the great teams that he's had in the past.
Okay. I think they'll be in the Final Four, no doubt about that. I still like the Bruins of UCLA to lift the big trophy at the end.
Okay. Who you down on, Tony?
The Los Angeles Lakers, they are in the middle of a losing streak, but Marty, it's more than that. They are not competitive. Like, they got beat by over 40 points the other night. They are just getting lambasted. And, you know, that's who I'm down on right now would be the Lakers. They're not even competitive right now.
Were you looking over my shoulder? Because that's who I had too. Yeah, this is getting a little creepy here. So
great minds think alike, at least semi-average ones.
Yeah, just how about we just leave it to minds think alike?
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm just looking it up here. LeBron is out tonight with a sore foot. Yeah, it's ugly. It's bad. It's just they went on a little bit of a run where they won like five or six games in a row, but Philadelphia, when they were way down, Toronto is not good. The Spurs are okay. The Pelicans are terrible. The Jazz are terrible. These are the teams that they ran up this six game winning streak in there. And with two, you know, the Grizzlies and the Spurs were two decent teams there. But ever since then, they've only been able to beat the Spurs and the Jazz since. You know, they lost that tough game to the Magic.
They did make some free throws.
Yeah, and ever since then, it's been a free-for-all. They've lost seven of their last nine. And like you said, Tony, it's not so much the losing, because you can lose and you can still see a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, it's never about winning and losing. It's about playing against the game of basketball. And they're not even doing that. I mean, they are 1 point. They only beat the Jazz by one. They are 1 point away from losing eight of their last nine. And like you said, 134 points given up against Miami, 134 to Atlanta. They lost to the Timberwolves by 19, and I don't think it was that close. They gave up 127 to Phoenix, 127 to the Nuggets. Even when they lost to the Magic, they gave up 119. I know scores are elevated. I mean, I get that. I understand that. But this team just can't guard anybody. They have. And when you're depending on a guy who's in his 22nd season to be your best player or second best player, there's only so far you can go with that. And I think, you know, early when we did our predictions, I was really down on the Lakers. I think I had them either fourth or fifth in the Pacific. And I'm feeling more and more confident about that prediction, because inevitably LeBron's probably going to miss time. AD is probably going to miss time, and it's just gonna, you know, it could very much snowball there in LA land. So, all right, Tony, episode number 111, coaching, building your team's defense. Anything you want to bring it home on, buddy?
Communication, closeouts, defensive transition. Those have to be the three bedrock foundational principles every day.
Yep. That is an everyday thing, and we are an everyday thing here at A Pen and a Napkin. You know, if looking for a little stocking stuffer, buy yourself a copy of Kings of Their Court. Tony has read it now, what, three, four times, you know?
Yeah, I've even shared it with my family. And so, yeah, it's good. So, yeah, I enjoyed it, couldn't put it down. I think I read it in like two or three days.
Yeah. Yeah, so take a look at that. We got a lot of things going on here. Got some potential big announcements coming up here after the holidays, putting some things together. Our coaching clinic is coming together, plus something else that I've kind of got in the works here. This is what happens when I don't coach a team, Tony. I kind of have just time on my hands, and I just have time to think about stuff and come up with harebrained schemes. And let's see if we can get a little spaghetti to stick to the wall here. So
you're a thinker.
Yeah. Well, better to be a thinker than a stinker, I guess. So
there you go.
Yeah. So episode 111 of the Coaching Staff, we, of course, want to thank our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services, All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Go check them out. We brought our car in yesterday for an oil change. They got us in right away. Took great care of us. Just a great place to go. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.